In a constantly changing world, today is as simple as it gets. You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, a podcast to explore, experiment, and power up your leadership to make the difference to your business, your people, and your success. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we dig deep into global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
So welcome to the first episode of 2021 of The Leadership Enigma. Well, what a journey so far. Who would have known? 31 episodes, 35 guests, a 5-star rating on Apple. We've been added to the reading list of the London School of Economics MBA program. We're ranked in the top 5% of 1.8 million podcasts globally. So it's amazing. Thank you. So please review, subscribe, and share with the world. So as we all start to see the light at the end of the tunnel of a global pandemic, 2021 is going to be a great year. I have a full array of eclectic and wonderful guests already lined up. So join me and allow the Leadership Enigma to be your friend, your confidant, and your learning partner, because we know that your leadership is energy expensive. So buckle in and let's see where 2021 takes us. Let's begin by meeting Guy Bloom. Well, welcome to the first episode of 2021 of The Leadership Enigma. And I'm delighted to welcome Guy Bloom, who I'm looking at now on the screen in front of me. Guy, welcome to 2021 and The Leadership Enigma.
I know, Adam. Thank you so much. I'm really, really pleased to be here.
It's funny because you've got a podcast as well. I'm now thinking to myself, oh, he's got quite a good voice for a podcast, hasn't he? I might have voice jealousy, but we'll come back to that.
It's going through a filter. Don't worry about that. My real voice is fundamentally different.
It's like a voice
jealousy. It's also like I answered the phone. You know, I answered the phone in my posh voice. I'm putting on my slightly deeper bass for the podcast.
It will drop away as time goes on.
Yeah, I might break character at some point.
You've got a great background. So you've got 3 decades of performance coaching. And obviously that's no comment on age because I'm feeling well old anyway. 4 times Martial Arts Hall of Famer, which I think we're going to have to come back to, aren't we, at some point. Author of Living Brave Leadership, which I want to touch on. And like myself, you're now a podcast host of Leadership Bites. So we share the same pain and experience. Oof. In some ways with it, don't we? So hopefully we'll learn from each other. But welcome. But just tell me a little bit about that background and how you've got to where you are now, because everyone's got a journey, everyone's got a story. Let's hear some of yours.
Yeah. And, you know, I often think about this, about how the heck did I get here? I was working with a colleague doing some work with Getty Images.
Yeah.
And we were in, it was either San Diego, I think it was, or Seattle. I can never remember which one it was. It sounds very grand, but we were there and we were working with the main board of Getty Images, and we looked at each other, and he looked at me and I looked at him in that rather knowing way, and he went, yeah, I know. I went, yeah, I know, right? And basically what we'd said to each other was, how the hell did we get here? So that's me being very alert to just how bonkers it is, because not imposter syndrome, because I, you know, we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
That recognition of the journey. And having done the podcasting, I'm super alert to people that have had that very pure academic route into maybe leadership development.
Yeah.
Or they've gone through the route of being very successful commercially, and then they've segued into doing leadership development. And I smile to myself, thinking of my higgledy-piggledy journey, to get here. So I literally left school with no qualifications and a kick up the ass. And those that know my story of some of the stuff that had kind of been in my background, you know, the fact that I'm even walking in a straight line sometimes and semi-coherence is, I think, a testament to many things. But yeah, you know, so I had a very complex childhood. Let's just sort of,
it's a good use of the word complex.
It is, you know, and I'll allude to it with father married 4 times, mother married 3 times, and that's the tip of that iceberg.
It's a rich background.
It's a rich background of complexity and trauma. Moving on. But So, you know, I left school with virtually, you know, nothing. What would be classed as 3O levels, and that was because I turned up and I think two of them were U grades. You know, so I, you know, obviously I'm not a daft person, but my head wasn't in that space at all. Went into the workspace. I won't give you the CV, but literally just always did well.
Yeah.
Did sales, did well, did management, did in retail, did well, but never, you know, never really saw it as what I wanted to be or what I wanted to do. My father had been a tailor back in the day.
Right.
So I grew up around tailors, and I grew up around people that understood customer service, and I'm just about bespoke and customization and making things right for people. So obviously there were lessons going on there which I didn't fully appreciate as a younger person, but actually from the moment somebody walks into the store all the way through to them leaving months later, maybe, or weeks later after something had been created for them, and that whole pride around doing something that really sat well. And if you're in the Birmingham area and you're of a certain age, your grandparents may have had a Lou Bloom suit, you know, so etc. So it was a thing. So, you know, that stuff goes into it. And from my perspective, when I went into retail back in the day was a proper profession. And I'm not saying it's not a profession now, but there's a lot of people from my age bracket that have gone on to great things from being in that retail sphere.
Right.
Because it was a lot less mechanical, I think, back then, in the sense of you controlled your own environment, you ordered your own stock, you controlled the P&L, you dressed at the store and the windows.
Yes.
And of course it became more mechanized. The diagram started, you know, years later, you would get a diagram from head office that told you what your shop window must look like. You know, the stock was automated and you got it. So it shifted, and there's nothing wrong with that. It is what it is. But actually what I realized is I'd learned to run a business by being in these different businesses.
Hands on.
Through my youth.
Yep.
Again, not fully realizing that, which has stood me in great stead, because now when I look back on, I have recruited people, I have hired and fired people, I have exited people, I have coached people, I have run a P&L, I have et cetera, et cetera. So these things that didn't mean anything to me.
They're real life skills, aren't they?
Yeah, and they were jigsaw pieces. Yeah. So when it meant later on, I was able to have conversations and, I get it. You know, maybe not at the level that, you know, you've operated at, but I understand the mechanic and I've been in that place and space. And so that retail route was fantastically useful for me. That's for sure. And in line with that, I ended up being working for companies like Churchill Insurance, and I was head of learning for them. And then RBS took over and they amalgamated Churchill and Direct Line. So I ended up being head of leadership and learning for Royal Bank of Scotland Insurance. So, you know, I did some, you know, some good solid positions. I was group talent manager for HomeServe, which was, a lot of people may know, they sold the warranties for the boilers and they do repairs, the emergency service, that kind of stuff. And I was in a talent role. So, you know, so I understood the L&D role. I understood the mechanics of working in a commercial space. I understood the politic of getting things into a board, signed off by a board, and understanding what it is that actually leaders really want. And there's a big difference between best practice.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between the logic of what something should be and then dealing with the actual hopes and fears of a leadership team and their anxieties around the commercials, etc. So I think for me, that journey of that rather eclectic background at the start, that working my way up from retail into more senior training roles, into more regional roles, and then being in those head of leadership and then those group talent roles, really bedded me into understanding the overall business and to understand the dynamics of then being in an organization where you're trying to bring learning into that space and
that whole process, I think, stood me well. And running alongside that, which you've alluded to, was a, I wouldn't say career, but I ran martial arts alongside of that all of my life. And that was something that played a massive factor in keeping me from probably not going to jail when I was young.
Well, thankful for that anyway.
So, but it gave me a lot of focus, and I can wax lyrical on that as well.
Yeah, with my background, I was an ex-cop, so I'm not about to say, I now know where I know you from. So no, that's not going to happen. But you've described a journey where you've really picked up, you know, considerable skills and capabilities along the way, amassed them, experienced them, operationalized them, digested them, and it's taken you on a journey.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And one of those things I think I often think about is that keeping moving forward, which is I walked into a Currys Digital some years ago, which, you know, when there was Currys.
Does that exist? Is that existed?
I'm not even sure. Maybe it was PC. Is it Currys Digital or PC World? They have amalgamated, but they lost the Dixons. Then it became Currys Digital. And then there's PC World, which is all part of it. I've lost track of it. But the point is, I walked into one of those stores in Birmingham, and there was a, somebody said, "Hey, guy." And I turned around. Well, hi. No idea, unfortunately, who they were. But God bless them. And how are you? I'm fine. And then it suddenly dawned on me. We used to work together. And they said the immortal words, "Yeah, I've got to get out of here. What do you do?" And I thought, that's one of those questions that if you answer it, you can seem like you're right up yourself. So I just went, "Oh, I'm a trainer," you know, because I thought that's just, and that's not to be magnanimous about it. It's just,
it's the easier answer.
It's the easier answer. Otherwise, it's look, hey, I've done, you know, look at me. And I didn't want to go down that path. And, you know, I'll definitely move out of here one day. And I thought, oh, brilliant. And hey, look, you know, the world's a big place. And we were having that chat for a while. But I thought, the thing is, it's not that what you know is right or wrong. It's just that if you keep moving forward, you keep learning more stuff.
Oh, I agree with you.
And then over time, that becomes a toolbox, and over time that becomes experience. So I think what I've learned is, at first I was quite worried, and probably my father was too, as in, what the hell are you doing, guy? Get a career, get a job, fix on one thing. But retrospectively, it set me up for not being a doctor, but in the context of what I do, it set me up with this massive toolbox of experiences and insights that that concept of just keep going, keep going.
Yeah. That really resonates. I mean, my mother never understood my career path, which is understandable in many ways. But, you know, I think, you know, apprenticeships, when we think about apprenticeships, they are really based on that ability to pick up skills and capabilities early. And actually, those apprenticeships may actually put people in a stronger position than kids going to university. There's going to be a compare and contrast at some point, and it will be interesting to see who wins the day and what is carries more favor with organizations. Now, listen, obviously, on your journey, you've started to crystallize a point of view as regards leaders and leadership. You wrote the book Living Brave Leadership. And just give us the essence of that. What got you to kind of put pen to paper, the immortal pen to paper, and what was the kind of the hypothesis that you were working with?
Well, the little bit of story that starts at the start of the book is that I worked for one of the greatest managers I've ever seen or experienced, and I was blessed to have him as my boss, a gentleman called Mark Jansen. And Mark Jansen ran a business called Blue Sky Performance Improvement back in the day. And we were at a conference, and there was a keynote speaker who gave his book out. And I read some of the book that evening, and I came back down the next day and I said to Mark, "You know this book?" And he went, "Mm-hmm." Now, Mark was a very wise, and well, he's still with us. He's an incredibly wise
individual. If you're listening, you are still with us.
Listening, Mark, you are still with us. And he let me run, you know, and I went, it's rubbish. And I just went, well, it's quite childish, it's puerile, you know. And I was just going on and on and on, you know, as is my wont. And he looked at me after a little while and kind of went, right. He says, "You know, how bad this book is. And I went, yeah, he says, it's better than yours though, isn't it?
Did you just do an about face and walk away?
Yeah. And that was the beauty of somebody like Mark. I was like, bugger.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely, touché. He was absolutely right. You know, exactly. And so that was a trigger for all these things that I had in my head.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to do was get onto paper, get into the book format, the thinking that was spinning around in my mind doing delivery and being in the delivery space that said, I do know these things that I'm about to talk about, and I reference them quite frequently, but I haven't created a methodology or a formalized way of verbalizing it that is coherent.
It's quite a cathartic process once you go through it, isn't it?
Well, a couple of things happened. Number one, when I actually did start to write the book properly, I had some personal realizations of not actually fulfilling my own criteria.
Right.
Which is one of those moments where you
good go, self-reflection.
Yeah, exactly. You go, oh, hell's bells. As in, I'm asking the reader to consider the following.
Yes.
But that's not what I'm doing. So that was very interesting and part of its own journey of kind of self-development, which is a whole nother episode. And the martial arts comes into this as well. So what I've learned over 30 odd years of doing the martial arts and running that alongside being in the commercial space in different places and guises is certain dynamics and certain behaviors that are inherently true. And what I started to then realize was, for me, there were four main things. Number one, and it was trust, accountability, bravery, and connection.
Yes.
So again, look, you know, this isn't, you know, the time that we've got, but trust is in essence saying, as a person in the world, I want to be trusted. Because it doesn't matter what I'm trying to do, lead you, get you to buy from me, get you to believe that I'm going to fulfill the statement I've made to you or the commitment from a customer service position or as a peer or a stakeholder. If you do not trust me, then this is going to be fraught with problems.
Yep.
And of course, if I don't trust you, it's going to be fraught with problems. And if my team can't generate trust, then we won't be trusted. And if this organization isn't trusted in the market and the product and the service isn't trusted, because without trusted, there's no buffer for error.
No, I agree.
So if you're not trusted, but it's always brilliant, well, I suppose you can trust that.
Well, and trust is quoted, isn't it, by so many organizations quite openly as one of their principal value propositions.
Right. But trust for me says, I'm not going to be perfect, but when I'm not perfect, you trust that I was acting with integrity, I was acting with, etc. So trust is the lead point for me. I have to trust. I have to be trusted. I'm trying to engender trust.
Okay.
Accountability sounds pretty obvious. It's probably more than just ownership. I think it's about what I refer to as being above or below the line. It's very, very simple as a concept.
Yes.
But when I'm operating above the line, it's not to me that accountability means things are going to work out as you'd like them to. It just means that while they end up where they end up, I know I was accountable and you know I was too.
Yeah. No, it's a big theme above and below the line, behaviors.
Right.
And
And what's key is my recognition that very often a project may go wrong, but actually if you were accountable, even when something went wrong, I may still have inherent trust in you because I saw you being accountable.
Yeah.
The fact that you were let down or something went wrong or you just made a mistake. But if you were being accountable and owning your learning, et cetera, then there's a lot of value in that. Bravery sounds relatively obvious in some respects.
Oh, I like the phrase you use, big pants, don't you, Faye?
Well, yes. And that's the analogy I use, which is there are just times when you have to put your big pants on and have the conversations that you need to have. You need to face into the emotional anxiety that comes with certain situations. So feedback's a classic.
Yeah,
at a relatively junior level upwards, we all know technically how to give feedback. and I can walk into any room, any board, any senior person that's listening now and go, so you can give feedback, right? And they'll all go, yeah, but when don't you?
That's a great question.
And the answer is a lie if it's I always give feedback. And I go, no, you don't. There are people that you hesitate with. There are moments that you step away from. And there are conversations that you don't want to have. Now, they may only be once a year because you're a grown up, you're senior. But when you don't do it, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? Because the conversation must be pretty serious then. So bravery is, interestingly enough, it is about sometimes putting your big pants on. But when I look at people like the emergency services or whatever that might be, and those kind of military units and those kind of people I've had contact with, what I notice is, or what I noticed quite quickly was that if you have fear or they have fear, and I saw this in the martial arts, unless somebody's a fundamental sociopath, when people get in the ring, they are scared. There is a moment of fear because the human, this other person's trying to punch me in the head, right? Okay. But what outweighs the fear is competence. And that's what I really started to understand, that you can put your big pants on, so it's metaphorically speaking,
but the
answer can't be always put your big pants on and go for it. Because if the competence isn't there, you're a brave idiot.
And then you're going to get hit in the head.
Yeah, and you're going into the boardroom. I'm going to, you know, face into that issue. Fine, but if you don't do it competently, you're being brave, so well done for that. But if you're not going to do it well, let me know how that works out for you.
Okay.
So what I recognize is that professionals are particularly good at being brave enough to learn and constantly develop so their competence increases. So their need to put their kind of metaphorical big pants on decreases.
Yeah.
Because the bravery's gone into the work ethic of getting good at it.
Of not doing it. It's kind of like the many know, few do.
Right.
Environment, yeah, isn't it?
Absolutely. Okay. And then last of all is connection.
Yeah. Tell me about connection.
And connection is at its most simplistic, one might say, eye contact and put your iPhone down when you're talking to people and turn the ringer off and the beeper off on the messages. So when you're actually present with somebody, you're not distracting from the conversation. That's all pretty level one kind of stuff. Yes, you should do that. That's the mechanics of being connected.
Yep.
The reality, though, for me, is around this idea of contribution.
Tell me.
Which is, are you willing to contribute outside of your own need? Because that's when I feel your connection. When there is no need for you to enable me, to help me, to give me your time, but you do so. A need outside of your own.
Yeah.
And again, when I work with senior teams, which is 95% of the work that I do, one of the first questions I will ask a senior team is, what do you do that isn't transactional? I.e., you need something from the other person, therefore you transact. I need those figures from you.
Yes.
Now, you're doing it with social pleasantries, and it's all very engaging. But when do you actually contribute to the needs of others around this table without any need being reciprocated or anything being given back to you?
Right.
And that's normally where you see people develop a quick case of Tourette's or, you know, a kind of a little, you know, eye twitch, because the reality is it's usually far and few between.
Yeah.
So what this team needs to do is to transact when it needs to. I need that from you. You need that from me, of course. It's not an instead of, it's an and. And what we need to do is to contribute outside of our own need. Well, what will that look like?
That
becomes very interesting.
Again, this really resonates because, you know, one of the things that I'm focusing on this year is human-centered leadership. And there are seven components to it, but one of those is about presence. And this really resonates in relation to, you know, that contribution outside of your own need. I like that. You know, I need to think about that in relation to, because, you know, people talk about executive presence and what does that mean and how does one?
Yeah, I could talk about that until next week. But actually, a lot of the I once had an exec say to me, "Hey, guy, I'd love some coaching from you." And I was saying, "Of course. What's the focus that you'd like to potentially bring to that?" And he said,
I'd like to be funnier. And I was like, okay.
That's an interesting request.
I said, well done. That's your first kind of step towards, that's quite funny in itself. But when you say funnier, first of all, I don't think I can make you funnier. But what is the outcome that you're looking for? Well, I just noticed that some of my colleagues are funny or amusing. Therefore, they can command the room a little bit more. Right. It's blah, blah, blah. I said, all right, okay. So what you want is to increase your personal impact. What you want is to be listened to, not through positional power, but just through the experience of
you.
Anyway,
so you didn't have him at the comedy club the following
Thursday. Exactly. So why don't we go after that and, you know, find your natural truth in that space as opposed to you fulfilling the caricature of being amusing or funny or telling not jokes or whatever it is. But I think executive presence is very often people's perception of whether or not they think you are there for your own need or for theirs, which brings you around to servant leadership and topics like that.
Now, this is something that people can find out more about because it's your book, Living Brave Leadership, which is available at all good bookstores.
Well, Amazon anyway.
Amazon, yeah, I'm with you, yeah. I'd say the same thing. Available from all good books? No, Amazon. Okay, fair enough. That's the advert for Amazon. Now, listen, you're a fellow podcast host as well, so I just want to ask you some questions as we come to the end of our time. What for you is going to be a big theme or a big topic that you're going to delve into and... I don't know. Yeah, be a focus for you for Leadership Bites.
So Leadership Bites, the podcast, started off primarily, I think, because I felt I should.
Yep.
Which is never the best motivation for doing something. So I wanted to do
it. And here you are, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Many episodes into it.
Yeah, and I wanted to do it, and I wanted to do it well, and I wanted the sound to be good and, you know, all those kind of things. But what's happened is it's become... something I have a deep love for now. And
we learn, don't we? I say that in a whisper. I mean, I learn loads. Yeah. This is an example.
I look over the people that I've had and just a couple of names, you know, Major General Paul Manson, who is the commandant of Sandhurst, Jack Zenger, global leadership expert, the Dave Ulrich, I mean, HR guru.
It's a privilege, isn't it?
It is. And there's a couple that have blown me away.
Yeah.
And I mean, Dave Ulrich, I was incredibly impressed. I mean, I've been impressed by everybody, actually. I mean, there's been a few where it's been a little bit difficult getting them to speak, but those were more at the start. Now I've probably upped my game. But Jack Zenger was just deeply knowledgeable and incredibly impressive. And then when you get someone like Dave Ulrich and you go, 30 books. And he was funny, he was engaging, he's obviously an academic, but incredibly, you know, not just smart, but human. And I did have that moment where I went, I can't remember if I said it on the podcast now or offline, where I was like, do you have a telly, Dave? And he goes, you know, why? He says, because I think when I'm watching Friends, you're writing a book. When you got 30 books out.
Only 29 to go, guy.
Exactly. But the person that blew me away actually was Duke Stump. And he... I was quite emotional when I was speaking to him. I got a little bit giddy on the podcast, actually. And I think you can see I slightly kind of was like, can I be your friend? I look back.
Tell everyone who Duke is.
Duke Stump was the head of marketing for Nike for 15 years. And then he went on to do marketing for Lululemon and Lime and Seventh Generation. And I mean, listen to the episode. But
I'm sure I have a Lululemon parcel downstairs somewhere.
The manner of him. And just the way, when you talk about certain things, you're not just doing this from an intellectualization. This is who you are. This is the way that you operate in the world. So the answer to your question is, I have some amazing guests that I've now been speaking to that are in the library that I'll be dropped each week. I've got some fantastic ones that have said, we can definitely talk about coming on. And as I've increasingly had people of higher brand recognition come on the podcast, it's meant I'm more appealing to those kind of people operating at that level. So I think it's just to keep pushing up the food chain, so to speak, getting characters on there. For example,
I've got a guy called James Sparrow coming on, and you know, he works for the prison service, and he helps locate prisoners into jobs when they come out of their sentence. And you know, so that's been a beautiful thing, actually, seeing the somebody who's really achieving something in that commercial space, all the way through to people like James and people like that who are very much at the other end of the spectrum, very much operating for the betterment of the world through their own experience and their own need to do so. So it's been humbling, and it's taught me things. And so, yeah, it's educational, but on many levels. So I think I want the podcast to give me that on a purely selfish level.
Yeah.
And I want it to be a way of people accessing what good podcasts I believe do, which is people sharing your experience and liking the conversations and wanting to come back to it. Not because I'm telling jokes about a parrot, which I do, you know, habitually, but because the experience of maybe the interaction or the humor with it or the learning from it.
And the stories.
People. Yeah, exactly. Everyone's so that's, got a great story. That's become a big thing for me now.
It becomes quite addictive, doesn't it, as well, I found, from that learning.
I've really enjoyed it.
So how do people connect with you or find out more about Guy Bloom and Living Brave Leadership?
Well, you can't go wrong if you go to livingbrave.com. There because that okay. has quite literally got everything on there in terms of making contact with me. But livingbrave.com, Guy Bloom on LinkedIn, and Leadership Bites is the podcast, and Living Brave Leadership is the book.
But, and you can find it's on my second screen, and it's kind of all there, isn't it, on the Living
really
Brave.
Is all there. If you go onto the front page of the website, I'm not afraid of marketing.
Well, as I say,
self-promotion.
A video of you beating a drum, but that's another story. Listen, my final question to you, because this has been great fun, and I hope we'll have another chat later in 2021, see where we are. And that was, what would your best piece of advice be to a 21-year-old guy?
As in a 21-year-old version of myself? Or just
Right,
okay, just not a 21-year-old version guy. Okay, so...
No, you.
I think I'd probably say just it'll work out. And it'll work out, but only if you don't stop. Just keep pushing forward. Keep pushing forward. And your journey may not be everybody else's, and what you do may not be straightforward and might not be the path that has been trodden by, you know, others, but just keep pushing forward, act with integrity, and just believe that it may not happen when you think it's going to happen. It may not happen as quickly as you'd like it to happen. It may not happen in the order you think it's going to happen.
Okay.
You know, you can't control life. And the big one for me, that I saw a film with James Coburn in it, where he was playing the James Bond equivalent in a movie. And
real film stars now we're talking.
Yeah, real film stars now we're talking about. And somebody said to him, why are you so successful? And he said, well, I don't compete.
Okay.
And it really struck me as comparison robs you. It robs you of enjoyment.
Oh, we could get into social media now, couldn't we?
Yeah, exactly.
So for the next 3 hours. So.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't look at the podcast numbers. I don't see how many people have bought my book. I don't, because comparison robs me. And I've learned that. Just do your thing. Do it well. Do it to the best of your ability. Compare against, could I do that better? And calibrate and all that. But don't look at it and, in essence, be jealous. And don't wish you had that. Because
that's good advice for my teenage kids as well.
Yeah, just let it go and find happiness in your own space and just trust in your own journey. And you know, at 51, you know, that's very zen, but at 21 I'd have gone, yeah, whatever. if I'd have heard it from myself, maybe I could have believed that a little bit more, because I think I spent time, I could have enjoyed things a little bit more along the way, I think.
Well, listen, Guy, it's a big thank you for kicking off the Leadership Enigma for 2021. And I wish you everything you want for Leadership Bites and the journey that you'll continue as we hopefully come out of this inglorious pandemic.
Well, it's an absolute privilege to be on the show. It's been a joy, Adam, and so thank you so much for having me.
Join us again next week for more essential insights on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or via our website, www.pca-global.com. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks for listening.